Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Nick and JP back on Afternoon Drive. We got the quarterback Deadpool coming up in about 40 minutes. Pete Futek at 4 o'clock today talking the latest in college football. But Browns, Packers, Cleveland, Sunday, two of the originally great NFL franchises. One's still pretty good, and you know who that is. But to talk about the game, to talk about Jordan Love and whether he's healthy, to talk about the Browns' chances, we head out to the fan hotline and welcome in of the Packers Radio Network, the Tundra Green Bay podcast. Former Green Bay Packer John Kuhn joins us now. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, guys. Hey, big matchup this weekend, and it's always fun to talk some shop.
I think it's probably more fun for you to talk shop right now than it is for us. Is it safe to say the vibes in Green Bay are immaculate?
The vibes in Green Bay are very good. They are very good, and it's one of those things where rolling into the season, we felt pretty good, and then that little extra pep start right before the first regular season game in the name of Micah freaking Parsons comes to town. And, yeah, we're very, very excited about what can happen here in Green Bay for this football season. And after winning our first two games at home against two teams that we consider to be right there in the hunt in the NFC, now we get to start our road campaign and see how this team travels.
Yeah, I'm trying to find ways that the Browns have some sort of advantage in this game. And I'll first highlight Myles Garrett because, I Myles moves all across the offensive line. I see a lot of Myles Garrett up against Anthony Belton in our future. Do you see it that way as well?
I mean, absolutely. They've done such a great job there in Cleveland of maximizing not just what Myles Garrett does individually, but what he can bring to the entire defense. And just because of his presence, and we're seeing this in Green Bay with Micah Parsons, it allows one-on-one availabilities for other guys up and down the line and for those linebackers like Devin Bush to start running. And that's when this Cleveland defense is really dangerous. And right now, they're leading the NFL in yards allowed. And I watched their film of their first game. They were right there in both those ball games. Cincinnati with Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. That score got carried away in that Ravens football game because of some turnovers on the offensive side. The defense came out there, and they did their work against that Ravens offense.
John, I was a big fan of the Micah Parsons move. You'd have to be dumb not to be. But I was a huge Reggie White fan back in the day. And so when they traded for him, my initial thought was, this is Reggie White 2.0. That was the move that jump-started the Packers dynasty with Brett Favre. I kind of feel like this could be the same thing. Is that what maybe Green Bay fans are thinking about the Micah Parsons trade?
Yes, it's it's very well documented in Green Bay. Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, he learned from Ted Thompson, who learned from Mike Holmgren. This is how you build a championship team. You get your quarterback, and then you get your quarterback of your defense. And for Brett Favre, it was exactly that. Reggie White to come in and be that emotional, physical presence on the defensive side of the football and really be the quarterback of the defense while Brett quarterbacked the offense. Yeah, in Ted Thompson's years, it was Aaron Rodgers and getting Charles Woodson to come and be that heartbeat, that motivational kind of guy. And then after Charles left, he tried to do it again with Julius Peppers, and we went to an NFC Championship game, and we all know how that happened out in Seattle, so got really close once again. And then Brian Gutekunst watched that happen, and he tried to make the same move on the second half of Aaron Rodgers' career, right before he won a couple of his last final MVPs, when he went all in on Khalil Mack. They lost out on that one. Chicago overbid the Packers and got Khalil Mack. And I think Brian Gutekunst always looked back on those 20, 21, and 22 years where they were hosting NFC Championship games and they were the number one seed in the playoffs and just thought, man, had we had gotten Khalil Mack in his prime for these years, would he have gotten us over the hump? Well, now they're in a spot where they have reset this roster, got this offense in a place where it's starting to cook once again. And now he goes out and makes his one big free agent move because he feels this roster is ready enough to make a push for the Super Bowl. That's why he traded the first-round picks. That's why he traded Kenny Clark. And that's what a lot of Packer fans are thinking around here as well.
What have you seen in the progression of Jordan Love?
So Jordan Love's progression is really interesting. His first couple years were stunted because he came in as a rookie during the COVID year and really got no preseason. So he was really a backup. We had really very little to know about Jordan Love. By about the time he became a first-year starter, it was, okay, now we got to throw you in because we got to find out if you can play. And at the start of that season, you saw glimpses of his athleticism, what he could do with his arm, but it was how he developed his first year towards the end of that season where you said, he's going to be a special quarterback. Started using the entire field, started checking down when defenses were in that two-shell, and he started ripping some balls down the seam, and you said, well, this guy's, he's got a hell of an arm as well. Last year, a little bit of a setback at the beginning of the season with the knee injury, and because of that, I felt like we were always just trying to get Jordan to 100% healthy again. Even when we got to the end of the year and he was playing better, it still felt like he's not quite clicking because he wasn't 100% healthy yet. Well, this year has been a different story, and we know he had his thumb injury during training camp, but he has looked fantastic in these first two football games. A pass or two here or there, if I'm being nitpicky, but he's got a rapport with these young wide receivers, and as long as these weapons that he has on the outside continue to catch the football, drops were a big problem in this offense last year. This year, not the case. As long as they keep catching, he's going to keep putting it where it needs to be.
John Kuhn, Packers Radio Network, Packer legend on the fan hotline here with Nick and Jonathan, breaking down the Green Bay side of things ahead of Sunday's matchup here in Cleveland. So just to further the conversation with Jordan, I think he was much maligned this offseason, and I think maybe denigrated to a place in the pantheon of NFL quarterbacks. I thought it was too much because I still think he was a really nice quarterback last year, even if he wasn't as good as the year before. So big picture, where does he belong in the pantheon of NFL quarterbacks?
Well, I think he's right up there. I mean, you wouldn't call him a Josh Allen yet. You wouldn't call him a Lamar Jackson yet. But if he goes on any sort of tear that we've seen him do multiple times late in the season, if he can put a full season together like that, I think he would be considered in that type of pantheon. Right now, I think he's that next tier of quarterbacks that you know you can win a Super Bowl with. You don't need him to carry the football team, but he has the ability to if called upon. So he's not the guy who does absolutely everything like a Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, but if you need him to get you that drive in the fourth quarter, he can do that and win you a football game.
All right, so you mentioned Jordan Love. We've talked a little bit about Joe Flacco as well, but only one team has been better than the Packers at stopping the run through the first two games, and that is the Cleveland Browns. What do you think the actual game plan for this game is?
Well, whatever the under is, I would take it because both of these defenses are flying around the football right now. And honestly, if there aren't any turnovers in this football game, it will definitely be the under because it's very hard to get yards on the Cleveland Browns, and it's very hard to get points against the Green Bay Packers right now. And I see this being, honestly, with the Packers going on the road for the first time, your offense gets a little truncated. You don't have all the bells and whistles. You don't have all the zips and the motions and the shifts because of the time clock and being on the road. So I would expect this thing to kind of be played in a phone booth with the run game and to try and play field position early on. Now, if either team gets the lead, that's what they like to do so they can pin their ears back on the defensive side and hunt after the quarterback. And if either team, most likely the Packers, gets in that position, that's where the score can get out of hand.
All right, John. The Browns, you mentioned, pretty darn strong against the run, pretty darn strong against the pass. Is the better plan for the Browns to focus on stopping the run, though, or is the better play here for to keep this competitive and maybe steal a win about stopping Jordan Love in the passing offense?
Well, the Packers got an injury on the outside with Jaden Reed, and he definitely takes out an element from the inside slot position for the Packers. So they're going to have youth there. They're going to have an opportunity that it's an unknown. You go into these games, 30% unscouted is what we say. 30% of the plays you're going to see are something that you didn't see on film. Well, whoever's running the slot for the Green Bay Packers is pretty much going to be new at that position. He's going to be tasked with what Jaden Reed would have been tasked in this football game, and you just don't know how that's going to respond. So to me, if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I try and attack that angle, and I would try and really pressure on the slot while trying to stay firm in the run game. And I'm going to make Jordan Love complete some deep balls against me on the road. It's a tough game plan because you can hit some big plays against you, but until that happens on the road, that's the way I'm going to play because that's the way that they can apply the most pressure on the quarterback.
A little early in the season for Rashid Walker to be saying he thinks the team can go undefeated?
You know, in today's day and age, all the information gets out there, right? But when I was playing, I remember we had a season we started 13-0, and it was when we were about 4-0. We had guys talking on the team then to the media about going undefeated. It was different at that time because social media wasn't as big and it didn't blow up like this. So I don't have a problem with it. I love guys being confident. I love speaking their mind. And you know what? Sometimes you say it no, and it's very unlikely that it's going to happen, but you just put it out there because if it's put out there, now you have to go out there and prove it. And it's a little bit of a motivating factor, not just for your opponent, as some people think, but for yourself as well.
John, there were some people who doubted your old ball coach, Mike McCarthy, saying he was a product of Aaron Rodgers. I remember the Mike Sherman era. I remember vividly the Mike Holmgren era. And yet this Matt LaFleur dude, his early returns with two different quarterbacks, 676 winning percentage in the regular season, multiple AFC title games. I'm just curious, like, where are Packers fans? He doesn't have the Super Bowl yet. Where are Packers fans with Matt LaFleur in terms of the ridiculous coaching lineage that comes before him?
Well, I think it's one of those where they love what he brings on the offensive side of the football. It's clear and evident. When Mike McCarthy was finished here in Green Bay, they needed to reboot the system offensively, and he brought all of that juice, and the proof is in the pudding. Aaron Rodgers won two MVPs under Matt LaFleur, and Jordan Love and this offense has been pretty exceptional as well. So he definitely brings that offensive-minded, explosive play caliber of a playbook to the team. The only thing left for Matt LaFleur to do is make a deep playoff run to and through the Super Bowl, and he'll be right up there with the Mike McCarthys, the Holmgrens. It'll take some time. I won't say Lombardi yet, but he'll be right up there with the recent Packer coaches that are going down in this town with streets named after them.
You know, John, when we have guests on and they constantly try to diagnose and figure out what's wrong with the Browns, a lot of the times the conversations veer back to the ownership. And it's like, well, Jimmy's too involved and he's too this and he's too that. And that might be a different story for a different time, whether you believe that or don't believe it. But one advantage I think the Packers have is that they don't have to deal with an owner that is constantly jerking the franchise one direction or another. Have you found that that is one of the secret sauces that the Packers have for being as good as they've been for 30-plus years?
So I'll put it to you like this. I spent a large portion of my career with Green Bay, but I also played in Pittsburgh and New Orleans under some great ownership in the Rooney family and the Bensons. And I personally felt there's advantages and disadvantages to both. The advantage to having an owner versus what the Packers have is there is an immense pressure all the way down the line to be successful, and everybody feels it. And listen, pressure can either make diamonds or it can break glass. So some people are meant for that pressure and some people aren't. The advantage to not having an owner with what Green Bay has is they can take every red cent and dollar and invest it back into the team, back into the facilities, back into their players, back into the training room. And it's noticed. It's very noticeable the type of attention that the players get here, and it's all about them. And that's something, too, that can either, A, be used as a great advantage because players take advantage of it and they don't abuse it, or could just turn into one of those luxuries from time to time that does get abused. So I think it always still comes down to the players and how they handle their situations that they're being put in.
John, great stuff, man. I think it's going to be a special year for you guys, and you were always a fun player to watch. So best of luck to you professionally, personally, and beyond this game, good luck in the season. Just maybe do one for Cleveland here. Yeah, can we get a gimme?
But well, what's the point spread? Maybe we'll just keep it close so that you guys can feel good.
So we can cover the, I think it's 8.5 now.
I think that's worse. Thanks, I think that's kind of worse, John. But we appreciate you, buddy.
Absolutely. Anytime.
John Kuhn, Packers Radio Network, former Packer, and the Tundra Green Bay podcast on the fan hotline there. Gave us plenty to get to. We'll react to what he had to say about this game and the Browns' chances in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Packers are basically the one organization in all of American sports that I can think of you know, like the good sports, that is wholly owned by the town that they play in. And I've always thought that's something I wish Cleveland could have gotten into at some point, although the local politicians here probably would have run it out. Maybe they would have moved him to Baltimore anyways. But I thought it was a great question, and I love that answer from him.
I just think it's so interesting because I really do. Like, you know, we had talked about, I don't know, was it earlier in the week, like the one team that you were jealous of for the previous 30 years and wish you could have their success, and you'd said the Packers. I think I said the Patriots and the 49ers. But, like, part of the reason why they're on that list, Nick, is because for 30 years they just had uninterrupted, no one's going to come in and say, no, we need to do this, we have to do this, or cave to fan pressure or anything. They had to grow quarterbacks for 3 years on end and just kind of wait in this incubation period that other teams just aren't afforded, and they really get to just kind of try things out. And you have football people running the show. It's not just owners coming in and saying, we want to do it this way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, I do think there's danger in thinking, well, it works in Green Bay, so it'd work.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Everywhere. But The more I'm around sports, like he mentioned, you know, he felt like the Benson family were great owners, and I was like, I don't know that I would agree with that. I think they hired Sean Payton, and hiring Sean Payton and then signing Drew Brees changed the perception of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, like, to me, when I think Pittsburgh is a great ownership. I think Green Bay is a great ownership because of the way things are set up and the way that there's an expectation of how things are run.
So, Nick, you've been in two spots, though, in your career where you've seen what I would argue to say is when national people discuss it, they think about of the five spots that are the most problematic from an ownership standpoint, they'd say the Browns with Jimmy Haslam, and then they say the Panthers. Yeah. Like the Panthers ownership, I mean, you were firsthand witness to how that can go just completely off the rails.
It's really rough when a 80-year-old billion-dollar owner who was known for not supporting the team financially and treating it like a family business, who got run out of a football for harassing women over a 20-year period, when that guy leaves town and somehow it gets worse.
Yeah. And somebody, people are like, hey, so the statue outside of the stadium was okay, right? Yeah. That was fine. It's not a big deal.
I heard they smelted it, by the way. I don't know if that's true, but I heard because they were like, they removed the Jerry Richardson statue and then it was to an undisclosed location. And I got,
well, they did the Paterno thing,
yes,
where they just tried to, in the middle of the night, yes, right, just take it off and pretend it never existed.
And at one point, I did see a picture of it in a building, just chilling in a building. And then like 6 months later, I had heard, and it is a rumor, so I can't confirm it, but a buddy of mine who's a PI said they smelted it and that they were reusing the material from the statue. But again, that's the guy that was problematic. And Dave Tepper came in. No, I mean, there's a part of me that wonders how many truly good ownership groups there are out there.
Like how many are in net positive? Yes. Let's put it that way. Because the cool thing about what the Packers have going is that it's obviously not a net positive in any sort of way from what the ownership can do. But no one's meddling. No one's getting in the way of your vision. And you just kind of get to just do whatever you want. Like, that's got to be invaluable.
Well, and It's something that I do think Jimmy has tried to do here with...
We've seen him take steps back at certain points.
He's set up. Like, I don't think Jimmy's the same way he is now, the way he was. But, like, I was on with my buddy Bill Schmid in Milwaukee today. Mm-hmm. And they referenced Jimmy Haslam owning the Bucks. And they're like, the guy got here and we went from a championship window to Doc Rivers being the head coach of this team and...
Because Jimmy likes headlines.
Yes.
Jimmy likes big time names. Like, he's attracted to that.
So there is a part of me that feels, and maybe this is fair, maybe it's unfair. There's a part of me that wonders, do we really learn our lesson? Or do we finally just give a group a real chance to fail as opposed to what it was previously? And there's another part of me that's like, maybe this is like a lot of situations in the NFL that the only way you're having success is luck, right?
I know, but I can't buy the idea that the Packers have lucked into 35 years of competent quarterback.
No, because I think they're the anomaly.
And I think part of the reason why they are the anomaly, though, is because the handoff from Favre to Rodgers was, let's put you in this three-year, you sit down, and no one at any point gets to go ahead and question if we're doing this the right way. No owner is going to get antsy about, hey, I got to sell jerseys, or I got to do this, or I got to do that. You just get to put him in this incubator, and then let him mature and realize where he needs to go. And then they just copied and pasted it. That's all they did between Rodgers and Jordan Love.
Well, and I think the thing that they... Because remember, the Packers in between Vince Lombardi and Mike Holmgren, there was about a 20-some year drought of too much of any success. And I think what... Because you don't have maybe a singular person, right? Because anybody that's a team president, interchangeable. Their board of trustees, interchangeable. That if you have disruptive figures, I think they've learned through whatever time it was between Vince Lombardi to Mike Holmgren about patience. I think they've learned about disruptive figures. And although that town represents, I mean, think about it. That town represents a specific town more than any sport in America because it's the only one they got. And without it, it's like a town of like 110 people.
Oh, yeah. If you were redoing NFL cities right now, Green Bay would never have a city. I mean,
it's Milwaukee, but still.
Yeah, but it's just not. That's not a place you put an NFL franchise.
But what's wild is, this is a through line.
It's like market 1 million.
Ownership ego is real. Dave Tepper, he didn't come up in football. He didn't earn his brass in football. But his owning a team became about his ego. And I called him out for it a lot because it was like, you made that move out of ego. You made this move out of ego. You're too involved. You're too this. You're too that. I think the same thing can be said out of Jimmy. And I think that's what you don't have in Green Bay.
Right.
You just, there's
that's
even
the
though they all own it, the specific ownership of it doesn't then go to the ego of the town trustees or
Gutekunst. I mean, he's had a chance to just kind of, and he's had missteps even in the Rodgers era. He had missteps as far as his draft was concerned. Up until really the past couple of years, he hadn't really invested heavily in wide receivers in early rounds. Now he's gotten that corrected, but he's been able to make these mistakes and have the patience to understand and see the rest of it through and then find out what he needs to do. And he doesn't have anyone breathing over his neck or trying to basically get rid of his job right away.
You let business people do the business. You let football people do the football. And by the way, you still got to pick the right football guys.
For like, sure.
Has there been some luck in the head coaching department because you've had great quarterbacks that have floated head coaches? Yes.
But they really get to do their job is the point.
Yes.
And that, I think that's one of the differences. It'd be like if the NFL had 32 silent partners as owners, I just wonder how different the league would be. We don't. We have 31 mega controlling owners, it feels like, and then one situation in Green Bay. And I just don't think it's an accident for why they've been good for 35 years.
I think there's football knowledge there. You know, like I think anyone that goes into, maybe it's civic pride, maybe it's just love of the job. I think the people who run that team on any level know football. And I'm not saying that Jimmy might not know X's and O's, but I don't know that, I don't know, because billionaires, I mean, Jimmy earned his lot with Pilot Flying J.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Tepper owned it in the banking and the financial world. And then these guys come in and they assume, well, I know this over here, so this is going to be, football is really intricate. And it's, but in football isn't just about the talent you have on the field. It is about the locker room. It is about leadership. It is about, you have to be holistically good on every front, or you have to be lucky. And Jimmy Haslam hasn't been either of those things through the first 12 years. And by the way, neither was Randy Lerner.
Or you have a lot of situations like you had within the Rooneys and then the McCaskies in Chicago and what you have in Cincinnati as well, where you just have these teams that have been owned by families. And it's like the third generation of these families that are running these teams now. And they've, yes, they've been built up in football, but that doesn't make you a football person necessarily. Mm-hmm. That just makes you basically just somebody that got really, really rich as far as genetics are concerned.
But even then, there is an understanding from the Rooney family of handed down, hey, when you're ready to fire someone, wait a year. And listen, the Giants have kind of gone back on this. Let's not forget, well, you've had a Ray Handy, and you've had a, oh my gosh, who is the schmo, Ben McAdoo, and you've had Joe Judge. The most successful stretch of Giants football has been, you hired Bill Parcells and got out of his way and gave him a good talent guy to evaluate. You hired Tom Coughlin, yeah, and you hired Ernie Accorsi. Like that at the crux of it, that is that consistency, that continuity. Continuity for continuity's sake doesn't work. Continuity with the right people can work for a really long time. And I think that's why if your family's owned the team for 4 years, the Bidwells seem to be the only family that has owned the team forever that doesn't get that. Every other family that has been, we're talking about more than two generations, seems to really understand, hire the right people, that's the toughest part.
Or they turn into what Chicago is right now, where it's like a mini version of secession. It's just, it's politics plays after politics play, and it's just, they're just taking it to the ground.
I also don't like that McCaskey doesn't have the Hallis name. I know it's, you know, it's Virginia Hallis's son. I'd prefer it's Hallis.
Would you just
can
take
he change
Hallis
the branding? Would he be willing to? I might like you 3% more if you. What's the Dodo's first name?
Well,
is it George?
George Hallis was the initial. That was the.
Who's the McCaskey?
Well, it was Virginia McCaskey, but she actually recently died.
Yeah,
and so now we have the son of Virginia.
Yeah,
and that's McCaskey, but he's like 75 and
isn't
doesn't
like
really
Eddie.
No, I think it might be Tom. I'm not sure. But he doesn't actually do anything with the team. He actually, oddly enough, he like umpires baseball games in like local communities. He's worth like $1 billion. The team is worth so much money. And he has no interest in the actual team. He like umpires local like 12-year-old baseball games on the side.
Oh, we got a real problematic.
Yeah, he's very non-involved. He just recently, in the past year after Virginia has died, has started putting himself kind of out there.
I'm going to be calling Chris Hansen on this fella.
Because it's 12-year-olds, is that why? I think it might do the high school level, too. I'm not sure.
That doesn't make it much
better. It's like the suburbs of Chicago.
Range.
He's like, he like umpires in his free time. It's different.
All right, everybody, hit the showers. 216-474-0092. Is the Packers' success, or how much of the Packers' success, is based off not having an owner? I do think ego is a huge, 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 huge downfall for so many owners. Honestly. I think it's the biggest downfall of Jerry Jones, where because ego, when we say ego, what we really mean is the need for credit.
Well, and it's more the idea of like, even this season for the Browns, think about it. There's a reason why a lot of people think it's going to go Flacco into Gabriel into Shador. That's what Jimmy said. Jimmy said that a month ago. And so if it happens to go down that way, people won't think this is Stefanski's big grand vision. This will be like, oh, yeah, Jimmy said we're going to see both quarterbacks at some point. Now he's playing it out because Jimmy usually gets what Jimmy wants.
Is the Packers' success based off not having an owner and the QB Deadpool update coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. It is time for the quarterback Deadpool to bring us up to speed with the latest results, how our teams are looking, if we're going to make any moves, things like that. We welcome on the commish, Jake Murren. Mr. Commissioner, welcome back.
Is that some more pandering there, Nick? Is that
absolutely
what that was?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no. No, it's just because you deserve that kind of respect.
That's, Mr. Commissioner?
Yeah, Mr. Commissioner.
I'll allow it.
Everyone knows.
I'll allow it.
I'm a big respect guy. I never habitually line step. I never go after people.
Pander your way up there, big boy.
Yes, sir. No, ma'am. Never look them in the eye. Because that's, I cower in respect.
Say it with your chest. Say it with your chest.
I think it also helped that you gave our teams compliments before you came on the mic.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a little wrong of the commissioner to be so outwardly I think you two have the better teams than Mac, who's the third team in this group. But you know what? That's not for me to say.
This is why he's the commissioner. He knows quarterbacks.
It's a little weird if Goodell's like, hey, Mahomes, I think you're doing awesome right now. It's just a little odd to me. I don't know.
You think he's like Mahomes and Spencer Rattler? Don't see a difference.
I mean, I don't know. It was a little odd to me. But again, there becomes a point with Mahomes versus Spencer Rattler where you can't ignore what's happening. Same thing here. At some point, the commissioner, Mr. Commissioner, you just can't ignore what's happening.
All right, Mr. Commissioner. Let's go. And again, I love that. Love that you're doing it. Love that you're saying we're better than Mac. Real quick, give us your updates.
Yeah, so Nick, your team has Drew Aller, Garrett Nussmeier, Carson Beck, and John Mateer on it. All undefeated with a combined record of 12-0. All four of your quarterbacks threw an interception in week 3, including Carson Beck, who tossed 2 picks.
That's just the cost of doing business, right?
Yeah. No risky, no bisky.
Yeah.
Team Nick.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show. Your way and on your time.
Wilson, no risk, no risk. Shooters got to shoot.
Sure.
Carson Beck did have those 2 picks in Miami's win over USF in week 3. Jonathan, you have Cade Klubnik, Arch Manning, Sam Levitt, and Dante Moore on your team. Has a combined record of 8-4 following Cade Klubnik's second loss of the season to Georgia Tech.
Yeah, good thing quarterback wins aren't what gets you drafted or not drafted. We need to remind the people.
This is true. Well, this is also true. Arch Manning, though, has thrown a pick in every game this season, but Dante Moore has impressed with 7 touchdowns, only 1 interception through 3 games.
Yeah, we're very proud of that pickup. That was a solid pickup there. I'm pretty happy with that one. Yeah.
Now Mac.
Then Mac Robinson. You have Lenora Sellers, Fernando Mendoza, Aiden Childs, and Jalen Daniels. The record for Max QBs took a hit this week with South Carolina and Kansas losing in week 3. Still good for a combined record of 10-2. Fernando Mendoza, though, is the only player in this QB Deadpool without an interception on the season. That could change this week, though, as they host Illinois on Saturday night.
I'd like to point out, Mac put his hands out to the side like he had won something when the line was Fernando Mendoza is the only quarterback on your team that hasn't thrown an interception.
In the QB Deadpool.
On the QB Deadpool.
The entire thing.
Okay.
Maybe the line should be Lenora Sellers might not even play this week and your Deadpool is falling apart right before your eyes. But I don't make the headlines.
Max's team needs more positivity, okay?
What if I offered you John Mateer for Lenora Sellers?
You can go ahead and take that and shove it where it needs to go. Exactly.
Oh, wow. Tough talking, Mac. You love to see it. Good for you. That deal expires by the end of this segment.
I'd never. If you wanted to call him up and take that deal, I'm sure it would do it. I'll throw out a Dante Moore for a Norris Sellers deal that has at least 24 hours.
I would not trade Dante Moore.
Listen, I love Dante Moore. That's why I took him. But if you want to give me Lenora Sellers, we can go ahead and wheel and deal here.
We can have some negotiations.
Oh, he's thinking about it.
He's actually thinking
about it.
Wow, my quarterback's statistically better than his quarterback, but no, that's not true. Actually,
Dante's better.
Yeah. Okay, the eye test over there. You've got glasses on, Mac. What are you talking about? Well, I've got eyes.
May not be getting an eye test here coming up.
Mr. Macular Degeneration over there is like, I know what I see. All right, so I'm going to compliment you. Dante Moore looks awesome.
He does look awesome.
And I still hold out hope for both Lenora Sellers and Fernando Mendoza.
I just hope Sellers can play.
And I will say, I think I'm more concerned about Aller than I am Nussmeier. I think Nussmeier's got everything around him. I just cannot tell you how little I think of James Franklin. And
Won't the scouts see through the idea if you think it's Franklin that's ruining him, or is it more what I've maintained with Drew, that he's just not very good, all things considered?
I don't know. That's a really good question. It's just you haven't seen the statistical jump, and I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking for some point this year he takes off, and you look up, and he's got 35 touchdowns. Same thing with Nussmeier, in fairness, but... Carson Beck and John Mateer are making me feel a little bit better.
Well, Pete Futek loves Carson Beck, and Carson Beck is it's starting to materialize there. I'm in a little bit of a bad spot.
Are you most concerned about Klubnik?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because the Arch Manning could throw one touchdown to 75 interceptions for the rest of the year. If they let him out in the draft, he's still going to go number one.
Yeah, and I also think, like, he wasn't a Hail Mary. But he was a long play. If it doesn't come up, overall
was what it was.
With Klubnik, that was your first round.
That was the first round pick. Yeah, I mean, we need to make that one work, and he looks really, really bad.
I think he's going to bounce back. Their next five games are so
easy.
He's
got it. It's still so early. It's so early to make a claim about any of these guys right now.
I think they're 1-2 now. Clemson is. I think worst case scenario, they're 5-3 by the time. I can't remember who their next ranked opponent is. I did know this earlier this week when we talked about Emory Hunt's comments, but I don't remember who the heck their next ranked opponent is. But they're, unless like UNC surprises them, I think Clemson's going to rebound. Mac, what quarterback are you most concerned about?
Honestly, it is Sellers just because of the injury. Again, like the fact that it was targeting on that, and also he'd kind of taken a little bit of a slow start for him as well. Maybe not the numbers that were jumping off to people, but he still had the explosive plays. But if the injury kind of holds him out for a while, especially with it being a head injury, that's a bit concerning on my end.
All righty. So we don't have time to do the full Guardians update, which we're going to do. We do have Pete Futek coming up in about 10 minutes here. We do have to say the Guardians just pulled ball game 3-1. They pull off the sweep of the Detroit Tigers, in part thanks to a very nice start by Tanner Bibee, and in part because of a huge, huge, huge home run by Jose Ramirez halfway through this ball game. So the Guardians are now, what, 4.5 games behind the Tigers?
Three and a half.
Good Lord, 3.5 games behind the Tigers in the AL Central.
This game had everything you'd need. It had your superstar doing superstar things, and it had Tanner Bibee outdueled Scooble in this game.
You were talking John Kensey Noel, right?
Yeah, no, that's not the superstar I was talking about.
Okay.
I'm talking about J-Ram, obviously. But yeah, wait, you know what? Let's put some respect on John Kensey's name.
He did knock the living you-know-what out of that ball.
But no, honestly, all you asked out of this game was for Bibee to go in there and at least hang with Scooble. And their stat lines, when it's all said and done, are very similar. I'd give the edge to Bibee in this one. And then you got, they're not putting up 10 runs a game. Guardians are putting 3 runs a game consistently. It's this pitching that's been unreal.
And they just keep winning. I just, like, this is the one that got me. I keep trying to pump the brakes. And we should still. There's 10 games after this. You can fumble the bag from here. You're now 2 games back in the wild card race after this one, because everybody else has got to play the rest of this day and obviously into tomorrow. But like, this is the one. It's hard not to get excited. It's hard not to put the cart before the horse after this kind of win.
You get to get excited about this one for sure. You do, and Tigers fans, I hope they're just going to cry all afternoon long. They have to actually be worried. They're going to blow one of the largest division leads since the late 1970s between the Red Sox and the Yankees.
My boy, 15 Jim
and a
Costa.
Half games.
I might have to call my boy Jim Costa.
He's going
to
melt down.
I might have to call J&J tomorrow morning and just be like, "What's up, fellas?
Valeni and Rico, you're going to lose your minds."
Mac, real quick there.
Really. really quickly, the A's in the bottom of the eighth, the end of the eighth inning, A's are leading against Boston 5-3, and the Mariners are leading over the Royals 1-0.
Okay, we need the Royals to do a little bit better there, but let's go. Let's go. Come on.
And we had a guarantee from the morning show that now they're in the playoffs, so I guess that's just as good as stamped.
Sounds like revisionist futurism.
That's not how that works.
Pete Futek joins us in 10 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.